Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup Podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. We are, over a month into the season now, Pete, and I feel like it's been a weird year. Like I look at a lot of my rosters and I've got players I like, but none of them are performing. A bunch of pitching I think is good, and my ERAs are terrible almost universally across my leagues. I've got I'm spending my days being torn between, like, the Guardians have the second best record in the AL and like the fourth or fifth best in baseball or something like that. They also have a negative run differential. Mm-hmm. So it's just been a weird season. How are you feeling about the season?
It's been like feast or famine for most of my fantasy teams. Like, my favorite team has just been terrible. And then, like, it's finally having a good week statistics wise, which you should be like, well, that's good in fantasy. But the thing with head to head is, like, even if you have a nice week, if your opponent has a better week, you know,
right.
Life sucks. Like, I'm losing ERA with a 2.38 ERA. You know, I mean, I'm losing save holds by one, stolen base by two. We're tied in RBI. And if you just look at, like, what the final score projects to be, if it ended right now, I'm getting blown out. And so it's just a frustrating season on that front. But we got a few contenders out there.
Yeah, my head to head CBS league, I'm going to be. My record's going to be pretty good, but I've got this league, we don't go by record. We go by, like, total categories won, right? So, like, if you win 7-5, that goes on your record as 7-5, not as 1-0. Mm-hmm. And I have, like, I have some good wins in here, but I've also got a 3-8-1 loss. Mm-hmm. And this week I am down. Boy, I'm down 1-11 or 11-1, depending on which way you want to look at it. And it's the differences between us going to the weekend. I'm down by 3 runs, 4 RBIs. He's killing me in stolen bases and on base percentage. Fine. 4 extra base hits. I'm down by 16 strikeouts, but I have a lot more pitchers going than him. I'm down by 1 quality start. So, like, there's a very real world where I get to, like, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I can get that back to even without like a great weekend. Just has to be, like, good. So it's a weird one. But yeah, that's gonna, like, if I don't get those back, like, if those all end up with me losing those categories by, like, 1 point, it's gonna really tank my record without feeling very fair. But, you know, that's how head to head works. Yeah. But we are on to episode number 167 of the Keeper Cup Podcast. I saw a statistic, by the way, today that only, like, 1% of shows make it to 30. Where was this? Let me see if I can find it. This came up because I was talking with Niv Shah and Justin Fibber, with whom I used to host the Autobot podcast. And Niv noted that if you make it to 20 episodes, you are in the top 1% of all podcasts. We're at 167. So that's a...
Yeah.
I mean, 167, this has got to be going for, like... Even if we'd done one every single week, we'd be at over 3 years. And we haven't been doing that. So I'm impressed with us, Pete. We're in the top 1%. So thank you to everyone who listens, because I think at some point, you know, Nick or Adam or whoever is in charge of making decisions about what podcasts to
pull the plug on that one.
They would have cut us loose years ago if you guys didn't enjoy the show. So I'm glad people are out there listening. We made it to 167, which means we have to look at jersey number 67. I guess that's the downside of making it to 167, is that we're running out of names to talk about with these jersey numbers. But there's an interesting one here, because, you know, we did this going up through 0-100 as well. And there is a guy on the list. He shows up as among guys who, you know, wore the jersey for a significant number of years. He's the top in our war. And I think when we did this, you know, 2 years ago, or whatever it was, he wouldn't have been there. And that's Seth Lugo. Seth Lugo's worn the jersey for 10 seasons. But if you go look at his career war, he's got 6.5 between last year, where he had 5.4, and this year, where he's got 1.1 already. He had 2.1 the year before that. The last time we went through this, he might have been down at at the beginning of last season, like I said, he was at, you got to take off 6.5. He would have been at 10.8, which maybe would have been noticed. But the year before that, he would have been down to like 8 something. Like, he would have been pretty far down this list as recently as a couple years ago. But Lugo, last year in particular, but he's picking up right where he left off.
Yeah, he really is. He's been a pleasure this year. I made an interesting trade for him in that league that I was just complaining about, where everything seems to not be going my way. 16 teams and strikeouts per 9 is a category. So Seth Lugo takes a little bit of a hit there. Yeah. But I flipped Carlos Correa for him. And I just desperately needed pitching. I mean, my IL is, Arrighetti, Scherzer, Glasnow, this is a 16 team league. So we're really hurting. But ever since I made the deal, Correa's gotten a little bit better. You know, he's still off to a little bit of a slow start, but Seth Lugo just kind of hit the resume button for what he was doing last year, right when I acquired him, which is kind of awesome. So yeah, I'm a big Seth Lugo guy this year.
Yeah, I think Lugo, he's an interesting one this year because it was so easy. He had that year in San Diego. He finally becomes a starting pitcher. He was 33 when San Diego converted him to a starter.
And he was a good reliever, too. It wasn't what do we do with this guy? Maybe we try him as a starter. He was a really good reliever.
He was, but even that, if you look at his numbers, he had a bad year in 2020, but we can ignore that. He made 7 starts that year. Fine. His 2 last seasons as a reliever, his ERAs were 3.5 and 3.6 with ERA estimators that match that. That's not elite reliever status, no. Right? That's good reliever. That's a guy you're happy to have in your bullpen, but it's not much more than that. And so it's interesting that they moved him and he basically lost nothing. His ERA improved, his ERA estimator stayed around the same. But it was really easy to look at Lugo, I think, at that point and be like, first year as a starter, the strikeouts aren't great. The velocity came down, which you'd expect, but I don't know. Well, let's see how this holds up. And then he comes out last year and is better on the surface, but the strikeouts were down, the velocity was down. He got some good home run per fly ball rate luck, despite a barrel rate that only improved a little bit. I was sort of he doesn't really strike anyone out. It feels like if he loses any velocity again, well, he has lost velocity again, which you would expect because he's, 35 now, but it's only about 2/10 of a mile per hour. But again, the strikeouts are down, about a 3% drop in strikeouts, and the walks are up and his exit velocity is up. I don't know. This year, the ERA is even lower. Last year, it was 3. This year, it's down to 2.84. But the ERA estimators, the FIP, XFIP, Sierra, they're all up over 4. And they haven't been over 4 since that really bad 2020 season in a small sample. And so I think there's a little bit of cause for concern with Lugo from that perspective. I also think he's the kind of guy who probably will find a way to be successful pitching through that kind of decline. It's never been for him elite stuff. It's never been elite velocity. It's always been he spots his pitches well. He mixes his pitches well. He has a deep repertoire. That's all there. That's all still there. I don't know. I guess with Lugo, he's a guy who I just will ever, no matter how long he does this, every year I'll be location can, guys can lose their location. That's a hard thing. It doesn't stick around. His stuff isn't great. He doesn't strike guys out. It's all going to fall apart at some point. And I suppose that's technically true. It is all going to fall apart at some point, but he seems to keep making it work.
Yeah, he does. And I think it's part of what you just described with the arsenal and stuff. That's oftentimes stuff that won't necessarily show up in the ERA estimators. And I also think we got to give Kansas City some credit because Seth Lugo is not the only pitcher they're doing this with. Yeah. Michael Wacha was pretty good for the Red Sox. And then did he also end up in San Diego? I can't remember. And he continued to pitch well. So I'm not giving all the credit to Kansas City. but they continue to juice that orange where he's kind of similar to Lugo. His FIP is much better. His FIP is 3.11, but his 2.98 ERA is still outperforming that, and it's way outperforming the expected ERA and the expected FIP. So, like, there might be something in the water in Kansas City. There might be some good coaching going on, because I don't know why. I feel kind of safe with these two, knock on wood. They just seem to be reliable guys who'll live in the zone and generate some soft contact. So, yeah, I like Lugo for this episode. There's really no one else unless you want to go with
Kyle. No. So let's jump to our head-to-head heroes. And, Pete, I'm going a different route than I think we've ever gone with head-to-head heroes. And I'm sort of cheating a little bit because we're recording this on a Saturday morning, May 10th. Because we're recording it on a Saturday, the last week's worth of statistics goes back and includes last weekend, right? It has Saturday and Sunday's games in there. This guy over that stretch has 4 saves.
Wow.
And only 2 of them are technically this week. So in your actual head-to-head leagues, he's only giving you 2 saves this week. Even that's good. But as of a week ago, Yoan Duran had pitched 13 and a third innings. He had 2 saves and 1 hold. He'd been pitching well. The walk rate's been a problem this year. He's walked over 4 batters per 9 innings. The BABIP has worked in his favor, which, you know, who knows how sticky that is. But he had only 2 saves through the first month of the season, month plus of the season, really. And now in the last 7 days, he's racked up 4 saves. That is not so much Duran statistic as it is a Twins statistic. They've been, you know, if your team never wins, you can't get saves. And the Twins have really turned their season around over the last like 10 days or so. If you go, I was talking before about the Guardians having, you know, the 3rd best record in the AL. They're also 2nd best in the AL Central, which has been really, really good lately. And if you look over the last 10 games, the Twins are 6-4, which doesn't seem great, but they're 19-20 on the season. So they were really in a bad spot. And now they've also won. That 6-4 is 6 straight wins. So they were in at least a four game losing streak, had fallen well below 500, and now have crept back up to 19-20. The challenge that they're running into is the last 10 games, the Tigers are 8-2, the Guardians are 8-2. The Royals are 9-1. The Royals are on a 7-game win streak. The Tigers on a 5-game win streak. The Guardians on a 3-game win streak. So all those wins for the Twins, they haven't really made up much ground, but they're playing much better. And if you're in a fantasy league, you don't care that they haven't made up ground. What you care about is that Yoan Duran looks like he's going to be an elite closer, right? I mean, the numbers are all good. The ERA is 1.04. The FIP is 2.07. He is striking out almost 11 batters per 9 innings. You really, really wish he wouldn't give up so many walks, but he has a 72.5% ground ball rate on the season, which is insane. He's always been a high ground ball rate guy. He was at over 60% each of his 3 seasons so far. But if he actually can maintain a ground ball rate up over 70% while continuing to strike out 30% of hitters, he'll get away with an 11% walk rate. Like, it's not a good walk rate, you can survive walking 11% of hitters if every single thing is on the ground. If you don't give up hard contact, he's given up a 2.4% barrel rate. If you have that many strikeouts, like, this will work. This will work for him. He's always been good at home run suppression. He hasn't given one up this year. His swing strike rate is up from the last couple of years. Like, I like what I'm seeing from Duran, and it's been a bit of a slow burn for him and from a fantasy perspective because those saves haven't been there, but they're piling up now.
Yeah, and I mean, look, hey, Mason Miller didn't get a million save opportunities, but because he was pitching so well, you know, he was very valuable last season. So if Duran is in the high 20s, early, low 30s for save totals, he's going to make up for it with his peripherals. And I think maybe the most important thing for him is this hot start, and combined with Garrett Jax's really slow start, has created a lot of separation there in Minnesota that I don't think people are maybe appreciating enough. Garrett Jax was outstanding last season. Griffin Jax. Who was I saying?
Garrett Jax.
I don't know who the hell that is. Griffin Jax. I just have Garrett Crochet in the mind, I guess. I think he's starting today. Griffin Jax. Griffin Jacks was outstanding last season, and was looking like arguably a better pitcher than Juan Duran, and he's terrible this year. And Duran's gotten off this hot start, only one barrel against. And again, even if the save total isn't that high, I still think he's going to be tremendously valuable. And I wouldn't even worry about the walks. Like, yeah, 11.4% is really bad. He's a career 7.8% walk rate guy. So I would expect that number to go down as the summer goes on.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't know. And I haven't looked deep enough to see, like, the increase in ground ball rate could theoretically be a result of a change either in pitch mix. I'm trying to pull some stuff up right now if I can, or in like the shape of a pitch. If I look at like his stuff plus numbers, they're showing stuff plus is showing a knuckle curve that he didn't. It's interesting. So StatCast and Stuff Plus are both showing a knuckle curve that he's throwing 20% of the time that he did not throw previously in his career. And a slider he's throwing 4.6% of the time that he hasn't thrown since his rookie season. That knuckle curve maybe replaced an actual curve that he used to throw 27, 28% of the time, but isn't throwing it all this year. So this might be a classification issue or something like that. He's throwing his fastball less. Sorry. He's throwing his four-seamer less. He is throwing a splitter more. And he is using his slider that he didn't previously use. This maybe this curve is a new shape curve because it appears to be based on the stats. And he's throwing his curve less. So there are some changes here that could, especially that shift from the four-seamer to the splitter, or to the, not the splitter, to the sinker. You know, a decrease in four-seamer usage and increase in sinker usage could both lead to more ground balls and negatively impact control, potentially, depending on if he just doesn't have quite as much control over that sinker. And so it is possible that what we're looking at is an active choice to get more grounders, even if it costs him some walks. It also could be that he's, you know, got a new curveball and he's working on controlling it better. Like, we'll see. I do think that the smart money right now is to say the ground ball rate will regress back towards his career numbers. The walk rate will regress back towards his career numbers, but it's worth watching because they may not.
Yeah. And his spin's up across the board too. I think he's just becoming a better pitcher.
Yeah. What about you, Pete? Who'd you pick for your head-to-head hero this week?
Yeah, this is kind of a lame week because it feels like all the best performers are just like studs. Like, I'm not going to be like, Shohei Ohtani, like, go trade for him. But I guess this is an opportunity to give my man Willie Abreu some credit. Abreu's 0 for his last 9, so it's kind of odd timing. But, man, he has taken his cutting down on strikeouts to a new level. Last year, he had a 28% strikeout rate, and things got off to such a good start. And it was like, man, all right, if he's going to barrel the ball as much as he's barreling it and not strike out, that's a pretty good combination. And over the last week, he has struck out, man, today's May 10th. So since May 3rd, he has struck out once. He hasn't struck out at all in his last 5 games. And over the last 5 games, he's had 2 3 hit games and 3 home runs, including a 2 home run game. So it's been, I hate to use this term already twice in the pod, but it's been a feast or famine week for Willie Abreu, where he's either kind of gone over or had a monster game. But the final numbers across the week look great. And I really am keeping an eye on that strikeout rate. It really feels like he's reached a new level, which is exciting as a Red Sox fan. So 15.3% barrel rate on the season. So Willie Abreu, my head-to-head hero of the week.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back over his last 10 games, he has 5 offers in which he went a combined, like, I'm trying to see here. He's got a couple walks in there, but like, I don't know, combined 0 for 20 or something like that over those games. And then the other games, he has, in the other 5 games, he has 3, 6, 9, 10, 11 hits. So he's averaging more than 2 hits per game when he gets 1 hit. But he's got a lot of, like, it's just been a weird, like you said, you know, week, 10 days. But the overall line is great. And that's, I think, just fluky. Like, he's 0 for 9 in his last 2 games, Thursday and Friday, as you mentioned. But also, as you mentioned, he hasn't struck out once. Like, going 0 for 9 without striking out is kind of hard to do, right? Because
especially when you hit the ball that hard.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. He hasn't been hitting the ball particularly hard the last couple days, but it hasn't been bad. It's just been not up to his standards. But still, you would expect, you know, even on a low BABIP, you would expect one of those nine balls to find a way to hit grass, but nope, didn't happen for him. So yeah, I think that's a good choice. I think he's been a great, like, I have him a couple places. He's been a great, great piece to have. He's been, go on.
I think he's a good example of something that you've talked about in the past, though, of like guys who are platoon players. You don't always want them to be everyday players. And Willy Abreu is an everyday player. He's just too good and too hot to take out of the lineup. But he still is only, with as good as he's been, I mean, think about how good he's been. He's hitting 188 against lefties. It's just through 19 plate appearances. So it's not like, not an everyday player, but I'm willing to bet a lot of those like blank games have come against left-handed pitchers. So it's just something to keep in mind with Willier. He's a strong side guy, and I would not consider him a platoon player. They have deployed him against lefties in the past. Obviously they don't face a lot of lefties like most MLB teams, but when he's in the lineup against a lefty, he's worth putting on your bench.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're in daily leagues, he's easy to manage. Like, he goes on your bench against left-handed starters, all of them. That is a 67 WRC plus. Interestingly, he's not really striking out much against lefties. He's walking against them. Like, he's finding ways. He has a 316 on base against lefties. That is great. But like, he's at least it's not zero, right? It allows him to be in the lineup without being a total zero. But he is not helping your fantasy teams against lefties. You should put him on your bench. If you're in weekly leagues and you can't do that day to day, you need to take a minute at the beginning of the week and just make sure they don't have like a fluky schedule, right? Like, if they're going to face three or four lefties, you may want to look at what your best option is for that spot. It may not be him. If they're facing, you know, five or six lefties, you should definitely bench him. If they're facing one or two, you should leave him in your lineup. But it is worth noting that his line against lefties is going to pull him down. And I don't think there's good reason to think that'll change. He does have a 214 BABIP against lefties this year. Like I said, he does. He is walking more than he's striking out against lefties. Like, he's not going to, I think he'll be better than he has been the rest of the way against lefties, but not good enough that you're going to want to use him. Like, last year he had a 48 WRC plus, he had a 238 BABIP against lefties. Like, he does not make good enough contact against lefties to be in your lineup. So, but I love that. I love taking the opportunity to shout him out, because I agree. I you know, looking at the leaderboard, the only, like, I mean, I don't know, the only bats that did anything interesting that aren't sort of the names you expect are like Michael Garcia, maybe Ryan McMahon. I don't know. There's a couple guys stepping up.
But even the pitchers, too.
Yeah.
This is a hard reliever. Week.
Yeah. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into the main topic of the show, which is answering some listener questions. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here. We're going to dive into some listener questions. And this first one, I think it's just sort of a good place to start, because it'll influence how we look at the rest, I guess. Hayden from the Auto News Slack asks, he doesn't really ask, he just tells us. It's more of a statement. Now would be a good time to review which stats become relevant at what sample sizes / evaluation of over and under performers to sort real changes from guys you think will revert to projections. It's a good question. We are now, like I said, over a month into the season. We started in, you know, late April or late March. We're into early May. So it's been like 5-6 weeks. Guys are getting up there in terms of, you know, I don't know, closing in on 200 plate appearances in some cases. A lot of guys over 100, 150, stuff like that. Guys are getting up into over 100 or closing in on 100, depending on how often they play batted ball events. And so we're starting to get to a point where a lot of things are worth looking at. Pete, what are you looking at right now? If you're trying to determine, like, hey, is this guy a buy low? Is this guy worth, you know, should I be cutting this player? What are the stats you're looking at this point?
I mean, I hate to answer it this way, but I'm still kind of looking at all of them. Definitely plate discipline if I'm looking for serious changes, you know, like what we just identified with Willy Abreu in terms of cutting down the strikeout rate. Because if you're not striking out, that means you're ideally walking or putting the ball in play. And if when you're putting in the ball in play, you're hitting it really hard, like that's exciting. That's probably going to be a good hitter. For pitchers, I still love swinging strike rate. I think that can help cut through a lot of like you can get into the nitty gritty and start looking at individual pitchers and the different pitches they're throwing. But at the end of the day, if what the result is an increase in swings and misses, I don't know if there's a better indication of what makes a good, particularly fantasy starter, let alone good pitcher in baseball in general. So those are definitely some of my favorite ones. Max exit velocity can be interesting too. Maybe weird to identify that one in the first month, but if a guy has already set a career high in max EV, demonstrating his like high end power or what he's capable of doing, and that has gone up significantly for particularly for like a younger player who's, you know, still growing, getting stronger, getting used to the major leagues, that's another one that could be like, oh, okay, well, maybe there is some kind of breakout here, because this guy whose career high in exit velocity before was 111 and now he just hit a ball at 116.8. like, that's significant to me. Other than that, just sort of the stuff that you'd look at all season, right? Average exit velocity, barrel rate, those indicators for hitters that are like, you know, there might be a change here. And again, for pitchers, same thing as hitters when it comes to plate discipline, generating swings and misses, not walking guys, those kinds of things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that all makes sense. And from you know, sort of order of operations thing here, earlier in the season, max EVs, swing strike rates for both hitters and pitchers, stuff plus, especially like, you know, stuff plus has shown to be sort of a very early indicator of pitcher potential. I have found, to be honest, I have found over the years that like, if a guy has a steady stuff plus that his performance doesn't match, at some point I'm like, eh, whatever's going on with his stuff, he's actually not using it well. Like, it's not as good as it looks. And so I am not the kind of guy who like honestly, at this point in the season, if a guy has great stuff plus and bad results, I'm not like, oh, he's going to regress to his stuff plus. Like, that's not how I'm viewing it. But early on, right, a guy comes up and makes one start and looks really good or looks really bad, and you're like, what's going on under the hood? After, you know, a single start like that, stuff plus is an interesting number to look at. And so, like, you look at a guy like Hunter Dobbins, who we're going to talk about a little bit later, but like, he's early in his career here, and his stuff plus is worth looking at, right? Because it gives you at least some indication of how he's handling major league pitching. Or major league hitting. For hitters, that early indicator, you know, max EV is a good early indicator, right? Like you said, if a guy comes out and a week in the season is setting a new max EV, like that could be meaningful, especially if it's a big jump. Swing strike rate. I also like to look at chase rate and swing rate overall for hitters. Mm-hmm. Not so much because I'm like, oh, he's swinging more, he's swinging less, that's good. Or, you know, obviously lowering a chase rate helps. But those kinds of things tend to represent an intentional change, right? So like, you could say as a hitter, I'm going to go out there and hit more line drives, and you can make a change, try to hit more line drives, but it doesn't mean that you're immediately going to hit more line drives. However, you can as a hitter say, I'm going to swing more, or I'm going to swing less, I'm going to be more aggressive or less aggressive, and just do that, right? That is completely in your control. And so it shows an intentionality of a change that I think is interesting. In a similar vein, and I haven't spent much time looking at this, but we now have, in addition to the bat tracking data, and so, you know, you can look at bat speed data, which is interesting, but in addition to that, we have a bunch of batting stance data. Where is the guy set up in the box? How far forward? How far back? How close to the plate? How open is his stance? That's another one that early in the season I think is interesting because it shows an intentionality, right? Like, if a guy is suddenly hitting the ball a lot harder, or a guy suddenly striking out more or less or whatever, like, there's some change that you're like, eh, it's too early to really count on that change. If you also see that that guy has closed up his stance, moved up in the box, moved closer to the plate, something like that, again, it shows an intentionality to what they're doing, that they've actively made a choice to change something that is completely in their control. And so the changes to things that aren't completely in their control feel more intriguing to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That said, that's sort of early stuff. Now that we're, you know, as far into the season as we are, and I know we're not that far into the season, but plate discipline changes for sure. If a guy is striking out more or less at this point, we're far enough in that I'm not, you know, yes, seeing that it was an intentional thing is good to know. But like, if a guy's contact rate is up and so he's striking out less, we're far enough into the season that that's worth believing. Mm-hmm. We are also around 50. That's like a 60 plate appearance thing for walk rate and strikeout rate that you start to be able to trust that a little bit. We're also, as you get past 50 batted ball events, which most hitters are, your Statcast data, barrel rate, hard hit rate, launch angle, those things start to stabilize. So we're now at a point where you can start to look at that too, which means that ex-woba starts to become sort of interesting as a indicator of how a guy performed. Now, it is worth remembering, we've talked about this before, that ex-woba is descriptive and not predictive, which means that a guy who has a really high ex-woba and a really low woba is not necessarily going to start hitting better. But if a guy has a really high ex-woba because their barrel rate is great, because their hard hit rate is great, that's really interesting to me. And that is a situation where I'm intrigued. The reason I call those things out is because there's things like, you know, bloop singles tend to have very high ex-wobas because they, you know, you hit the ball just high enough and just soft enough and nobody can get to it. But those are not indicators that a guy is going to keep a high batting average in the future or something like that, right? But if a guy's hitting rockets all over the field and they're not finding grass, that's good to know. And so, like, I guess we'll talk about this. I listed this guy as a guy to talk about, but if I go check out Nolan Jones, you know, Jones had that great 2023 season. He was awful last year, to say the least, and he's been worse this year. The woba last year was 287. It's 264 now. Now, that's not a huge drop, and he's not playing in Coors, and so like the WRC plus went from 70 to 69. It's not a huge, like, he's basically, you know, right where he was last year. That's still bad. But he did bring his strikeout rate down by about 1%. He's walking 14.4% of the time instead of 12.1% of the time. Like, there have been some like little positive indicators here. And if you go look under the hood, he had a career 89.9 average exit velocity coming into this season. Is so far this season, 94.7. His career hard hit rate was 44.1. He's at 51.7 this year. His career barrel rate was actually 12%. It's only up to 12.1%. But last year when he was terrible, it was 5.9%. All of this is adding up to a 346 ex-woba, which is not super far off the 362 he had in his great season in Colorado. And all of this, I mean, it's like, you know, we talked about chase rate. His chase rate is down. He's swinging more in the zone, which I think is generally a good thing. His swinging strike rate, which came down last year, has come down even a little bit more. His contact rate is up. Like, all the things I would look at for a hitter look pretty good for Nolan Jones. He's also hitting more fly balls, which, given how hard he hits the ball, should be a good thing. And maybe as the weather warms up, it will be, but it hasn't played out that way for the home runs. He's also, the other thing he's doing that I also look at is he is pulling the ball more. So a career 35.1% pull rate that fell down to 27.2% last year. He's up to 41.4% this year. So Nolan Jones, like, if you think about the things you want hitters to do, you want them to chase less, he's doing that. You want them to strike out less, he's doing that. You want them to walk more, he's doing that. You want them to hit the ball harder, he's doing that. You want them to barrel the rate more by hitting it harder at the right launch angles, he's doing that. You want them to pull the ball more and pull the ball in the air more, and he's doing that. And none of it is working. Not any of it is working for Nolan Jones. But like, every single stat I look at tells me he's making the changes you want to see a hitter make. And so that's all the kind of stuff I'm going to look at. Now, I guess that makes Nolan Jones a buy low. The weird thing with Nolan Jones is he was still going, like, in auto new leagues, he was often going for, like, I don't know, 10, 12, $15, depending on, like, you know, he was cut everywhere last year, which makes sense because he was so bad. And so he was available in all the auctions. And then we talked a lot in auction season about how thin outfield was. And as a result of that, like, you know, his median salary is still $7. And that's after his, you know, he's down to 56.2% rostered. He's been getting cut a lot. Like, his 30-day roster percentage change is more than a third of leagues he's been dropped. So he was over 90% rostered 30 days ago, and he's now 56.2% rostered as of today. So even with all those cuts, his average salary is still up over $7-$8, which means that where you want, like, if he's a free agent in your league, and I'm looking at my leagues, I'm in seven leagues. He is a free agent in four of them. His minimum bid in those four leagues is 5, 5, 7, or 7. Is he a buy low? I think he is. Am I willing right now to spend $5 to $10 on him? I don't know. Maybe at the $5. Maybe I should be starting some auctions on $5 Nolan Joneses to try to get in before he gets going again. But he's just a really hard guy to buy low on because, like, where he hasn't been cut, he's $10, $12, and $15. And so, like, I have that $12 version, and so far I've held him because the underlying performance looks so good. But, man, he's a weird situation because, like, if you're contending, you can't trade for him as a buy low unless you have such a deep outfield that you can afford for him to be terrible. If you're rebuilding, he's not cheap enough to be a buy low. And if he's a free agent, you need to have significant cap space to add him. And so he's a buy low, and I'm not really sure how to, like, in auto new leagues anyways, I'm not totally sure how to recommend you act on that. In other formats where, like, you can just pick up a guy using waiver spot or fab, like, I would be picking up Nolan Jones, I think.
Yeah, I mean... I want to be back in on Nolan Jones. That second half of 2023 was really exciting, and everything seemed to be clicking. And even I was like, no, it's not Coors. Like, I think this, I mean, obviously a lot of it had to do with Coors, but, like, yeah. I think this guy's having a breakout, and then injuries and just freaking horrible last year, like you said. Guardians lineup is good, not great, right? And he's a platoon player at the bottom of it. So even at, like, best case scenario, and of course, if everything starts clicking and he starts living up to these Statcast numbers, then, like, he could potentially move up the lineup and maybe see more at bats.
Up until about a week or two ago, he was, like, fairly regularly hitting early. Like, he started the season hitting fifth or sixth for the most part. And then largely as a result of, I think, these underlying metrics that said he was hitting the ball well, even though the results weren't there, in mid-April, he moved up to the two spot. And he was regularly hitting second for basically from April 19th until May 4th, he hit second more than any other spot in the lineup. And then they moved. And then the last week, he's been back in six and eight because he's still been bad. And so looking at the way the Guardians have deployed him, I think they view him, I think they're seeing the same things that we're talking about, right? I think they're looking at him and saying, like, his at-bats look good. Yeah, he is running a 29.8% strikeout rate. He's going to be a high strikeout rate guy. He's hitting the ball 95 miles per hour on average. He's like he's doing exactly what you want him to do, right? Like, yes, it'd be great if he struck out 20% of the time instead of 30. He's not going to do that. Fine. But he's hitting the ball and walking enough. Like, he's hitting the ball well enough and walking enough to be successful with that strikeout rate. Not elite. He's not going to, you know, win an MVP award or anything like that, but he could be a good hitter with that strikeout rate. And I think the Guardians are seeing it. And so they moved him up and said, hey, the results are going to follow. And they just haven't yet.
But I mean, if you're telling me to buy low, like, buying low at $5 doesn't feel like I'm buying low at all.
But what about
a really expensive 159 hitter? And, like, if I'm going to do that, I can't just add him and assume, like, he's going to go back to batting second despite the 159 batting average and the five whatever OPS, because Major League Baseball teams, they definitely are looking at the Statcast data and be like, we might got something here. But if he's not getting on base, and, like, yes, he's walking, but the OBP is still the OBP. The OPS is still the OPS. I just don't have a lot of faith because the Guardians tend to like churn out dudes who can take that two role pretty easily, like the Schneeman guy or whatever the heck. Like, like you guys just find players, and I want to believe in Nolan Jones. I can't do it for $5.
Yeah, no, I agree, but I think in a league. So my CBS league that I mentioned earlier in the episode, when guys get cut, they go back to zero, so you can pick them up for a buck. In our Fantrax listener leagues, where it's draft pick compensation, I think he's a guy who could be worth adding if you have the bench space to add him. Now, I'm also dealing with so many injuries that I'm not really sure how I can do that in most places, but yeah. So getting back to the original question, which was about like what stats we look at, I think that this has given you a sense of like, you know, it's still like throughout the season, it's plate discipline, it's Statcast data, it's swing strike rate from hitters and pitchers for that matter. I guess the one last note I'll make on this is one of the things I've really come around to over the course of my fantasy career is that you can't wait for stuff to stabilize to act. If you wait for stuff to stabilize to act, you're too late because somebody in your league is going to be like, this guy had a great week, I'm picking him up. And so I like to look as somebody's breaking out or potentially breaking out. I like to look at these things, but I look at them less to determine whether or not a guy is worth, whether or not I'm going to pick up a guy, and more to figure out like how much of a bet do I want to make? Right. And as numbers get more real and stabilize more, I'm more willing to make a big bet on a player. But the reality is, like you mentioned Schneeman's getting picked up now, right? Daniel Schneeman is getting picked up right now. And so, yes, you can look at it and be like, oh man, it's really hard to tell. And I can pull up his numbers right now. You can pull up his numbers and say like, boy, it's early. Do I really believe this? He's got a mid-20s strikeout rate. That's a big improvement from last year, but it's still high. He's got a 340 BABIP. He's got a 27.8% home run per fly ball rate. There's a lot of numbers there you can look at and be like, those numbers look like they're going to regress. Like, that doesn't look great. But he's got a 20.8% barrel rate. Yeah, 20.8. His max EV is up to 111.2. It was 108.3 last year. That's a pretty significant difference. His hard hit rate was 38.1% last year. It's 47.2% this year. He's got a 397 WOBA and a 395 XWOBA. So, yes, you could look at his numbers and be like, I don't know if I buy it. You can look at his numbers and be like, I need more. I need him to prove this over another couple weeks. Too late. It's too late. You don't have another couple weeks. So I tend to look at these kinds of things now as like, if everything looked great on Schneeman, I would bid more on him. But if I think he's worth picking up, I'm going to make that act now, even though it's not stable. I'm just not going to make as big a bet. I'm going to be a little bit more cautious than I would be if everything looked great. And I'm going to have a list of things in mind of what I'm going to watch, right? Is that barrel rate staying high? It's not going to say 20.8%, but is he continuing to barrel the ball at a high rate? Is he showing any improvement in the strikeout rate? Is that BABIP looking like it's going to come back down, or is he going to be a high BABIP guy? Like, there's things like that that you can track after you pick a guy up that'll help you determine when to cut him loose. But you can't wait for these things to stabilize. You have to act early because somebody will.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. And I'm sorry, man. Nolan Jones is screwed if Daniel Schneeman maintains a 20.8% barrel rate. Well, yeah. He's not going to see that top third of the lineup. Holy moly.
Yeah, and I do think the other thing with Jones is like Chase DeLauder is starting his minor league rehab assignment. Now, that's not minor league rehab, like he's getting ready to come up to the majors. He's in the complex league to get ready to go back to double A. But if DeLauder is healthy, he's going to get called up because they're not going to wait for him to get injured again.
They better not, man.
CJ Kafis is killing the ball in triple A. Like, there are some guys who could come up. Juan Brito, once he's healthy again, is going to start pressuring at second base if somebody doesn't step up and take that spot, which could push Schneeman into a full-time outfield role. Like, it could get crowded in Cleveland. And unfortunately, as a Guardians fan, it's not crowded in the way, like, this isn't, boy, we don't know if we have room for Roman Anthony crowded like Boston has. It's, yeah, there's,
we're so 73. Good.
Well, but for Cleveland, it's like, they're like, seven different dudes who all like might be major leaguers. They might not. They all might be terrible, but they all might be major leaguers. And so all of them are going to get looks at some point. And that, you know, at some point, the results have to be there for Jones or he could be in trouble. So let's get one more question in before we take our next break. This question came from, let's take one of two. You're John Ball, the illustrious brother of Pete Ball, sent us two players he wants us to talk about. We'll start with one of them. He feels like people are not really talking about Mackenzie Gore. And he says, you know, he's hearing all this stuff about like, oh, Casey Mize is doing this and guys like that. But like, Gore looks like an ace is ace. Mm-hmm. And we're not discussing him enough. So let's remedy that, Pete. Let's discuss Mackenzie Gore. What do you see with Mackenzie Gore?
Sure, yeah. I mean, John's been beating the Mackenzie Gore drum for a long time, sometimes often to his own detriment because, you know, Gore's career has been so up and down, and sadly for Gore, mostly down. I think if you're new to fantasy, it should be noted, Mackenzie Gore was the number one pitching prospect in baseball. He might have been the number one prospect for a period of time. Was he part of the Soto deal? That had to have been Gore, right? That wasn't...
Yeah,
that had to be the Soto deal. So he was one of the centerpieces in that deal. Obviously, James Wood and CJ Abrams pretty important as well. If I'm all thinking of the same, I don't know. AJ Preller makes so many freaking trades, man. But I'm pretty sure that was the trade. But Gore has always had really good stuff. His issue has been walks. That's been one of the main issues. The main issue, I would say, for Mackenzie Gore has been walks. But they have been so much better this season that like it is kind of worth getting excited about because everything else is really, really good. Now, you might look and say, all right, he had an 8.9% walk rate last year. That wasn't even that bad. It's down to 7% this year. It's becoming an absolute non-issue. And like, I don't know. I we're talking about this. We have a little group chat going with some of the fellas in my fantasy league. We were talking about Mackenzie Gore for honestly what felt like the 400th time this season. And in his last outing, he did have, I apologize, I'm getting it now, May 4th. Yeah, he had four walks in five innings. And it's like, man, that's, is it coming back? I kind of took it as the opposite because the Mackenzie Gore of the past few years would have walked four and then given up like a grand slam or something and would have pitched 3 2/3 innings. He didn't have his best stuff. He walked four. He still gave five innings, one earned with nine strikeouts. Like, that's a different Mackenzie Gore than what we've seen in the past. Not in terms of strikeouts. He's always struck guys out. But, like, putting his team in a position to still win the ball game despite not having his best stuff, that's, like, ace-level ability. And so I was going through healthy starting pitchers, and I can't remember all the different names because this was a while ago, but healthy starting pitchers. So ignoring, you know, like Logan Gilbert and stuff like that. There's, I think, 17 starting pitchers that I feel comfortable taking over Mackenzie Gore. And then I'm like, man, is he right now among healthy pitchers, my 18th guy? And by player raters, he's even higher. I guess I'd end this with an article just came out this morning, like Great Timing by Brent McGuire on MLB.com. And he talked about some things about like, he even brings up Stuff Plus, for example, like Mackenzie Gore's bread and butter is his curveball. Nobody gets more strikeouts in the curveball than Mackenzie Gore. And that's not hyperbole or exaggerating. Like that's a fact. He talked about how his curveball grade on Stuff Plus has gone from a 102 in 2024 to a 95 in 25. And yet everything about it like looks better. So I don't really know there, but you kind of brought this up before that sometimes the Stuff Plus metrics just don't line up with the production. He's getting more induced vertical break, a lot more horizontal break. And he took a little bit off the velocity to maybe command it a little better, which is great because again, walks have been an issue for him and the guy has just been incredible. So I'm in on Mackenzie Gore. I think the reason he's not being talked about is because we still are so scarred. We want to say like, yes, he's now a fantasy ace, but he's built up a lot of bad will. And so we need to see this go a little bit longer before, you know, we're putting him up there at the likes of Tarek Skubal and Paul Skeens.
I think there's also just not a lot to like, there's not a lot of advice to give here. If you have Gore, you put him in your lineup. Yeah, like that's sort of it. He's not, you know, even if you think he's going to regress from where he is right at this second, which I kind of think he is, he was good last year. So even if he falls back to what he did last year, and last year he did 3.90 ERA, but 3.53 FIP, like, you know, mid threes kind of stuff. If you look at his projections, the ERA ranges from a low of 3.47 from Steamer to a high of 4.18 from the bat. But most of them are more in that like 3.7, 3.8 range. Like, he's not a guy you need to sell high on, because unless you can, I guess if you could sell him as like a top 10 pitcher, top five pitcher, maybe right. You should do that. But in general, he's a good pitcher and he's going to be a good pitcher. He's made, you know, he made 32 starts last year and 27 the year before. And so there's some reason to believe he can get you some depth and go deep in the season. Like, he's just not a guy that there's a lot of movement on. He's not getting traded a lot of places. He doesn't make it like, so there's not a lot to talk about from that perspective. Now, I commented, I think he is going to regress from here. And here's why. I think his stuff plus overall is down a little bit. I'm not super concerned about that, but his location plus going up is what's really made a difference. And that's less sticky. Guys just don't maintain their location as well as they maintain their stuff. And so, you know, Eno Saris, when he talks about stuff plus, is sort of the evangelist for stuff plus, will talk about how, you know, you bet on the stuff over the location because the location plus can come and go a little bit. He's at a peak right now in his location plus, and I suspect that will drop off a little. We'll see. He's still giving up a lot of hard contact. His barrel rate against is 11.4%. His average exit velocity against is up to 91.2. His hard hit rate against is up. Like, last year, he brought down his barrel rate against, his average exit velocity, his hard hit rate against, like, all those things came down from being real problems his first 2 years. And now they're back up to kind of being real problems again. And so, like, you commented, like, oh, he would give up four walks and give up a grand slam. Like, he still looks like the guy who, if he gives up four walks, might give up a grand slam. He just sort of hasn't. And so I have some concerns that I think that left on base percentage is going to come down. I think he's still going to be a little bit homer prone. And I think the walks will come up at least a bit from where they are. And so I do think he's going to regress from where he is. I don't think he's this good. I would also bet against the strikeout staying this high. Like, the strikeout swing strike rate is way up. I think some of that is real. And I think he'll probably, I would bet on a career high strikeout percentage, but not maintaining what he's doing right now. All of which is to say, I think Gore is a very, very good pitcher, right? Like, I don't know if he's, you know, locked in. Like, he's like a, you know, right now he looks like a top five starter. I don't think he's that. Is he top 20? Maybe. But even if he's top 30, he's probably not a guy you can sell for much more than that right now. He's not a guy you can buy for much less than that right now. He's just, if you have him, you're happy and you keep riding him out there. And if you're not, if you don't have him, then too bad.
Yeah, and I think that is, you know, what you led off with there. That is at the crux of, like, why he's not necessarily being discussed as much, because, like, if this was before the going into next year, we might hear a lot more about Mackenzie Gore. Like, oh man, where do you rate Mackenzie Gore? His strikeout rate jumped to a ridiculous, you know, 33% or something, and, you know, he had 200 strikeouts and 160 innings and one hour X amount of games. Like, that's when we're going to start hearing about Mackenzie Gore. But right now, you're right. I mean, there's just not a whole. He's not available in places. You know, a lot of people aren't going to want to trade for him because they don't want to buy high, and other people don't want to trade him away because what if he actually is this good? So there right. really isn't that much necessarily to break down from a fantasy roster editing, for lack of a better term, roster managing, I guess, perspective. Yeah. But I do like him, and I would agree. I think he's a top 30 starter safely, and I do think he has top 20 upside, because if those things that you said are going to regress, don't regress as much because he's just becoming a better pitcher, then he probably is top 20 with the strikeouts he's putting forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I got three more questions. We're going to try to get to them kind of quick. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. The last three questions we got here, I don't know if we can get through all of them. We're going to find out.
Lightning round.
Also from John Ball. Yeah, we tried a lightning round before and we got through two names in like 10 minutes. So
lightning round.
But apparently you and your brother were at Hunter Dobbins' debut, and Dobbins now through four starts has a 2.78 ERA and 22.2 innings pitched. Yeah, the error indicators aren't quite that good. 3.37 FIP, XFIP is 3.72, 3.64 Sierra. He is, you know, we talked about that, you know, that improved 7% walkout rate from Gore. He is walking Dobbins 4.2% walk rate. Now that only comes with 19.8% strikeout rate. That's a little concerning. But a 12.4% swinging strike rate isn't bad, and suggests that maybe there's some juice in that strikeout rate that we haven't quite seen yet. And if you look at his most recent start, he did, I think he went, yesterday, and he went six innings with six strikeouts and no walks. I picked him up, by the way, in that head-to-head league that I'm getting crushed this week, and had him for that start, but wasn't enough. I'm still getting crushed. But I mean, if you look at what he's done, he had a rough start against Minnesota a week ago, which was right as Minnesota was starting that hot streak that they've been on. 5 2/3, four earned on seven hits and two walks with only two strikeouts. His other three starts have been really good. And even when you add in that Minnesota start, right, because you can't just ignore a guy's worst start. So when you add in that Minnesota start, he still looks pretty good overall. But like, he's striking out a batter per inning outside of that Minnesota start. So, you know, we talk about there maybe being some more juice in that strikeout rate. You can sort of see it there. I don't know. I haven't actually watched this guy pitch. I've only looked at the numbers. You've seen him pitch. Is there anything to get excited about?
Well, let me start with the I saw him pitch thing. I had a great night. It was an amazing game. We had amazing seats. My brother took me to that game. It was a great time. I am not somebody that is like capable of watching a pitcher pitch and being like, here's how good this guy is. Like, let me get that right out of the off the bat here. I'm a guy who needs the numbers. This is not my profession. I enjoy doing this podcast, but I am not that good. Sorry if that's a disappointment to our listeners. Look, he's interesting. He has no pedigree. The strikeouts were not there in the minor leagues, despite having a pretty good swinging strike rate throughout the minor leagues. So like, it's still, like, for whatever reason, that's his situation. Now, his CSW is north of 32% right now, which is crazy. So, like, I understand getting excited about him and wanting to dive deeper here. The Red Sox have just not been an organization that can produce pitching. They're just not. So, like, it's going to take a lot for me to get excited about this guy. I've been hearing about, you know, Brian Bayo, and everybody knows I was a Tanner Houck guy, and Whitlock, and all the, you know, Cutter Crawford. They put forward good starts and then they take four steps backwards. So I'm not saying that's going to happen to Hunter Dobbins here, but like, organization matters. And this is an organization that has given me absolutely no reason whatsoever to get excited about their pitching prospects. So when one gets called up with like literally no pedigree and looks good for four outings, like, I just simply need to see more. What I do like is he does throw pretty hard. He's averaging 95 in the fastball. He throws five pitches over 10% of the time. So he has an arsenal that is deep enough to help him on nights where like maybe his best pitch, maybe his fastball isn't working as it should. He can kind of escape those situations where some of those other pitchers I've named, if they don't have their first pitch, like they're cooked. So Dobbins may have an arsenal that gives him some run here. Obviously, ideally being on a team like the Red Sox, he should have some pretty good win potential. And despite, you know, being a rookie, they're clearly letting him go six innings pretty regularly here when he shows he has the stuff. So there's stuff to get excited about. I'm willing to bet if you have him, not new, I'm almost confident you got him for a buck. So he's worth holding on to. It's just, I'm not ready to draw any conclusions based on what we've seen here because, you know, the pendulum tends to swing in the other direction. I don't think this guy's going to be a sub three ERA all season.
No, but let me read something to you real quick. Eric Loggenhagen on Fangraphs in February wrote up his picks to click, guys he thought would crack the top 100 next season who didn't this year. Dobbins was in that article. And here's what he said about Dobbins. I'm going to try to read it quickly before we move on. Dobbins was hidden as an underclassman at Texas Tech because he was a reliever as a freshman. His sophomore year was wiped out due to COVID, and he blew out and needed Tommy John as a junior. So he basically didn't pitch in college. He ended his 2024 season at AAA Worcester, and his innings count has climbed to the point where he could feasibly handle a big league starter's workload as soon as next season. That, I think, implies next season, not this season, because it's written in February. Dobbins doesn't have an exciting look or delivery, but he still throws hard up to 98. For what it's worth, he's been averaging around 95. Up to 98. His curveball is his repertoire's bat misser, and late in the season, Dobbins' splinker became more identifiable. The emergence of that pitch is the key to Dobbins getting a grade bump here. So that there is something here from a scout saying, hey, there's growth potential here. I think that's enough for me to, where I'm desperate for pitching, which is basically everywhere, to consider him, to consider picking him up. And this goes back to what we were saying before about like, is there enough here to be like, yes, he's a good pitcher? No, but if you wait till you can answer that question, you're going to be looking at all the Hunter Dobbinses that other people picked up for a buck. I think now is the time to act on Dobbins. And the one thing I'll caution is his, other than this, I guess we already cautioned stuff, but his starts have been St. Louis, the White Sox, the Twins, the Royals. Those first two are not particularly good teams. The Twins haven't been good, although they've been very good lately, and he caught them at the beginning of that streak. The Royals have been great lately. Now, he pitched at Kansas City, which is a good park to pitch at, but he shut down a very good Royals team. But we're still waiting to see what he does against, you know, consistently good offenses. But I'm intrigued. I'm definitely
intrigued. He had a strikeout on Bobby Witt Jr., which in and of itself is impressive. He dotted one right at the knees, called strike three. I mean, it was disgusting. Nice. So on an anecdotal basis, yeah, I like it.
Next question from SG Gutierrez on Discord. Young guys that are fringe or post-hype prospects that are getting some run. Meisner, Drew Waters, Angel Martinez, Evan Carter. Who's legit? Who's a flash in the pan? Carter is the only one of those four guys I'm interested in. Angel Martinez is a fun guy to watch because he takes good swings. He makes good contact, but like, I don't see the upside there. I mean, Waters, boy,
there's nothing like
Waters
that.
Now. I know we're talking about like Waters
38
post type. I don't think he's quite that old.
He's 26.
He's like 26. Jeez, I literally would have thought he was 30.
Dude, we've been hearing about this guy forever.
But I just, now the thing with Waters, he has drastically cut down his strikeout rate, which is great, and maybe signals something.
Yeah, but look at the lift and the chase rate. I don't know.
I'm not buying it. I think even if he does keep the strikeout rate down, he doesn't hit the ball that well. Like, even with that strikeout rate, his xWOB is 299. Meisner
velocity is pool noodle.
Yeah. Meisner, like, go get some stolen bases, I guess. But Carter is the one who, like, I'm not even going to look at his stats because we haven't seen enough yet to really look at what those stats are. This guy was an elite prospect. He's worth taking a gamble on.
He was like a top 100 pick like a year ago.
Right. And our last question from Jay Moses on, I think this came from Blue Sky. Jay Moses 17 on Blue Sky. In an auto new league, what level of prospect should you expect in return for an elite bat like a Devers or a J-Ram if you're hoping to rebuild? This depends a lot on the salary of Devers or Ramirez or whatever elite bat you're trading. If you have those guys at a potentially keeper level price, you know, let's say they're $40, right? And you're trading them to someone who, yeah, they'd be an expensive keeper, but they're potentially a keeper. I probably want a couple of pretty good prospects. Like I'm selling. Yes. I'm in a league right now where I'm selling and I'm looking at moving either Tatis or Schwarber or both potentially. I have them both at what I think are reasonable prices to potentially keep them. Schwarber is $37, so he'd be $39 next year. Tatis is $46. They are killing the ball. They've both been great. And for one of those guys, like, I've been asking for, I mean, basically I've been asking for teams. Like I told one guy that like he has, let's see if I can double check what I specifically asked for. And this hasn't happened yet. So maybe I'm asking for too much, but there was a guy who has, Lawler and, let's see. He has Lawler and someone else, and I can't remember who. Oh, Lawler and Roman Anthony. And I was basically like, I'm going to need at least one and maybe both of those guys. And if it's only one of those guys, then we need to be talking about some significant additional pieces. And we haven't been able to come around to an agreement yet. But like, you know, he was, you know, talking about like Lawler, Bieber, and there was one other name on there, and I can't remember who it was. And I was like, you're talking about like a prospect whose team refuses to call him up, who's had injury issues, an injured pitcher, and like you're getting a guy who you can lock in as a stud in your outfield for the foreseeable future, like including future seasons. I need to know that I'm better off. Like, I need to be pretty confident that my team will be better next year with the guys I'm getting than with just, because at that point, like if I'm not going to get enough, I'll just keep Tatis and Schwarber and I'll start both of them next year and I'll be happy with that. That's where I am, is like, you need to be able to walk away from a deal like that thinking, you know, yeah, I made my team a lot worse right now, but more than likely I'll be better off next year than this other manager will.
Yeah.
Cause if you're, yeah,
no, I mean that's the ultimate piece of advice right there. But like, it's also so early in the season. We're like, it's hot news. So you might know even going into the season, like this isn't my year, I'm going to be selling, but that doesn't mean you have to do it right now. The listener brought up Jose Ramirez and Rafael Devers. They're studs who are performing like studs. And guess what? In a couple of months, they're still going to be performing like studs. So you do not need to rush to do anything. And if I wasn't getting a level of prospect that I was interested in, there's no chance I'm moving them. I mean, like in the keeper cut, Otten League, that has been just the worst league ever for me, maybe. And like, I've got guys like Austin Riley at $40. You might not even view that as a keeper for next year. I'm still going to be looking for, like, do you want to win the league or not? Like, if you want a player that's as good as Austin Riley, you're going to give me a top high-end prospect, and I am in no rush to trade somebody like that. So even if they're not at keeper price, you got to demand a lot in May.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that if you know, if you're looking to trade somebody who you think is overperforming, then maybe you go get the best piece you can. Or if you're really in a desperate situation, like, I would call this a desperate situation, but I have Wilson Contreras in a dynasty league that's a one catcher league, where I also have Agustin Ramirez in a minor league spot. And once Agustin Ramirez uses up his rookie eligibility, I'm going to be required to call him up. And I do not carry two catchers in this league. It's not a deep enough major league bench to do that. I'm looking to get the best I can. Like, I'm just looking out there and trying to figure out what's the best return I can get. I'm not going to just like take literally anything for him. But I feel differently about that than, and I'm competing in that league. And so I don't want to get myself into a situation where I have to call up Ramirez. I still have Contreras. I have to pick between the two of them, or I have to cut someone else I want. Like, I don't want to get in that situation. I'd rather get some value now. If I'm in an auto new league and I'm rebuilding, I'm not in that situation. I could sit on Ramirez or Devers or Riley, like you mentioned, or Tatis or Schwarber, like I mentioned. I could sit on them forever. I am in no hurry. There is nothing forcing my hand. And every single day, and then this is the other thing I'd remind the people who are buying. If I'm selling, this is the thing I'm telling the people who are buying. Every single day you don't pick this guy up, your team's doing worse. And those points are gone, right? This is it. If you get to, you know, Tatis is putting up 7.5 points a game. Your fifth outfielder is putting up 4 points a game, 4.5 points a game, whatever it's called, 4.5. The 3 points you would have gotten today if you had made that trade yesterday, they're gone. The 3 points you'll get tomorrow if you make that trade today, you better make it or they're gone. And so, like, put the pressure back on the team that's buying, because they're the ones who need this to happen today. Doesn't matter to me. If I get the prospect I want, I could get him today. I could get him in June. I could get him in August. It's all the same. I want them for next year. I don't care what I get from them this year. If you're competing this year, and I feel this way where I want to buy now. And I'm willing to pay a premium to buy now, because then, you know, again, looking at the points per game, and you could, this works for any format, right? If you're doing roto, you could look at it as a number of home runs or stolen base or whatever you're getting. But like, if I buy now in a points league, those, you know, 60 days that I get Tatis today instead of waiting until July to pick him up, that's 180 points that I pick up over my fifth outfielder. That's a lot. That matters. Don't wait. So But if you're selling, if you're, you know, that was the question that Jonathan asked, like, if you're selling, like, be patient, like, put the pressure on the other team and make sure that you walk away thinking, my team is in a better position next year than it would be if I just kept this guy. It's not about getting the most value you can. It's about getting value that actually puts you in a better position. Now, if you're, if you've got a $65 Jose Ramirez and he's like, I can't possibly keep this guy, that's different. And then you do have to be a little bit more selective, or a little more, a little less selective at some point, but that point is not May 10th,
nope,
or May 12th when this episode comes out. That point is, you know, as you get closer to the trade deadline. Right now, I'm with you, Pete. It's like, even if this guy's not a keeper, right? You don't think my $40 Austin Riley is a keeper? It's fine. You're still running Jake Berger out there at your third baseman and getting nothing out of him.
In the minors. So like,
yeah. Right. Fair enough. That's a bad example.
Maybe no, it's a great example. that's actually a terrific one.
No. You were running him out there as your third baseman, and now you're stuck with, like, I don't know.
And Manuel Valdez.
Right. You're getting great results out of... Right. He's on the aisle. You know, you're getting great results out of Dylan Moore, but, like, you'd rather be using him at middle infield and you don't really trust that he's going to continue. And, like, that's fine. If you want to keep, you know, gambling on Dylan Moore, that's your call. But Austin Riley's here for you if you want him. But you're going to have to meet my price. And so that's the thing. I think if you're selling, like, hold strong. Because at the end of the day, you're not in a hurry. The other team is. All right. Well, our lightning round, we got through it. I don't know how lightning it was, but we did get through it.
We finished, John.
Yeah, we finished. So thank you all for listening. We'll be back with you again next week.